Ingenious is the word. It's an ingenious text about an ingenious man. It reminds me of a friend of mine who knew that he was going to be downsized. He worked in computer technology. He developed a software program that the company really needed, but the company decided it didn't need him any longer. So he locked the system so that only he could get into the software. And after he left, they had to contract him to do the work that he formerly had done as a paid employee. Ingenious, yes. Pious, no. He was a Luther. And I think that's the problem that we have with the text for today. It's about this ingenious, shrewd manager who's complimented by Jesus Christ for being dishonest. And we say, that doesn't go along with our personal piety. That doesn't make sense. Either you're supposed to steal or not steal, and the seventh commandment is very clear about that. You shall not steal, and the commandment says, as Luther explained it, we should fear and love God so that we do not take our neighbor's money or possessions, or get them in any dishonest way. Not any dishonest way. And so we have Jesus saying, make friends by means of unrighteous mammon, so that when it fails, you may be received into the heavenly eternal habitations. And he's talking about this dishonest manager. Face it. The manager, we know what he did. You have 800 gallons of oil? Make it 400. It's on me. You owe 1,000 bushels of wheat? Ha! Make it 800. It's on me. Ingenious, yes. Pious, no. Now, we all have our possessions, and we all have to figure out how to use our possessions in life, and we have different amounts of possessions as God gives us. And in today in America, there's a great concern for money, possessions, and how we use them and whether or not we are able to use them rightly. People are downsized right and left. Pensions are going out of existence. And so when Alan Greenspan writes his Age of Turbulence, we know it's going to be a bestseller. Who cares if he wrote it in the bathtub? We know that somehow we need to know what the economic future is going to be so we will know how we are going to be economically. But our future is only secure in God because everything else ultimately does fail. Our money will fail. Bill Gates is worth $59 billion at last count. But someday, the best of care will not keep him alive, and he may have an ostentatious funeral, but he'll be just as dead as the homeless man who died under the bridge, and nobody really knows who he was. I have a friend who's getting terminal cancer now, or he has terminal cancer. He'll no longer be head of chaplains at a VA hospital. Who can fight that, you say? I had a lady one time in my congregation. She was 95 years old, and we were celebrating her birthday. And I said, how is it to be 95? And she says, fine, but all my friends are gone. Money is called unrighteous mammon here. It's one of those things we have for a while, and ultimately it fails. It must be an accursed possession if Jesus would call it that. It is fraught with all types of wrongdoing. It's hard to spend your money exactly the way God wants us to do it. And we know in our society, with Enron and the way people manipulate business and taking other people's money and being dishonest in one way or the other, it becomes a scandal. The lady who recently is suing casinos because she lost $900,000 over a series of years and now she has no money. And she says, the casinos made me do it. They gave me hotels, they gave me food, they gave me airplane tickets. It's not my fault I wasted my money. Or the man who weighs 900 pounds and they had to take him out of the house with a crane. Did you see that? We know what he did with his money. Usually we use money to improve our lot because we're Americans and we're capitalists. And capitalism is based on always making progress, always needing more, and always figuring if whatever we have next, the latest iPod, that will make me happy. Jesus says in chapter 14, he who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Radical. He who does not give up everything he has, everything? Maybe the text made a mistake, you see. He who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. And again, he says in Luke 12, sell your possessions to give to the poor. Give yourselves purses that won't wear out and a treasure in heaven that won't be exhausted and won't fail, you see. For money fails, and when we put our real stock into it, there's not much left. Make friends by means of unrighteous mammon, says Jesus, so that when it does fail, when it stops, you'll be welcomed, you'll be received into the eternal tents, the eternal dwellings, the eternal habitations. I suppose we would like to change those words. Unrighteous mammon, could you make it more pious for us? Perhaps we could call it worldly wealth. That's much better, because the mammon of wrongdoing, the mammon of unrighteousness, the mammon of injustice doesn't sound right to a pious person. Maybe we could change the words and make Jesus come off more holy, or preserve, if nothing else, our own personal sense of piety. But even the text stops us from doing that, because the man is so reckless and deliberate with things that don't even belong to him. Yo, 800 gallons of oil, make it 400, it's on me. He gives it away deliberately and recklessly with an eye to the future, so that someday when he doesn't have a job, he will be welcomed someplace with some friends and somebody will take him in. And you say, but it wasn't his money. And what do you and I have that has not been given to us? What do we have that's not just God's gracious gift? We say before meals, the eyes of all look to you, O Lord, and you give them their food in due season. You satisfy the desire of every living thing. Do we believe that? And it's not ours either. Money can be used to make friends. Maybe we should use it to make spiritual friends. Make friends by means of unrighteous mammon. Maybe we need to knock down buildings that don't attract the next generation. Maybe we need to have no buildings. Maybe we need to have new buildings. Maybe we need to take the money and form communities that are different than what we thought of before. Maybe we should buy good clothes if that's what it takes, or wear shabby clothes if that's what it takes, or have a party for people who can't invite us back, or pay tuition for a child in a Lutheran school in the inner city whom we've never met, or send food relief to Zimbabwe where people don't have any food right now because of the way the economy has been taken care of by its dictator. Maybe we should adopt children from other countries because they will hardly ever have a chance of hearing the gospel in these Asian countries, and many of them could grow up just being pop prostitutes. So it costs $20,000. What would we have done with the money anyway? When you see Jesus, you see the forecourt of the heavenly Jerusalem, always focusing, always helping us to look ahead, always helping us to see beyond the now, always helping us to see the real future. And when we see the future, we will see the people who will welcome us into heaven when we get there simply because of our possessions. Who will welcome you? Your mother or your father you took in or cared for, a fellow student whom you shared what you had? A young person who has a tumor and needed your support and love and you gave it to him. Whoever welcomes a child, even, says Jesus in my name, he welcomes me. It's all a process of Jesus working among us. Jesus is working through us, helping people to see Jesus. That's what the money's for anyway. It's just money. Jesus says, you know, the sons of this world wiser in their own generation, their own kind, than the sons of light. The Greenspans are wiser than the LCMSers, you see. And trust. Ultimately, if we're going to do this type of thing, we have to trust that God will be generous with us and grant his grace in this whole area of money. Why did the man in the parable believe he could get away with it? I mean, shouldn't the guy be tossed in jail? Shouldn't somehow the owner, the master, say, I'm not going to put up with that, and this is what I'm going to do to get even with you? He trusted that the owner was generous, I guess, and would have mercy, I guess. We can't fret over every dollar we spend. We'd be like the Pharisees tithing the dill out in the garden. Look, I'll take 10% of every one of these weeds and I'll take it to the temple, you say. Pious indeed. Christ-like? No. Or Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus said, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I cheated anybody out of anything, I'll repay it four times." And I wonder what his wife said. It's slightly risky business, this use of possessions and wealth and property, and we cannot do it perfectly, but we can trust in grace, and we can trust in the generosity of a generous master. Give and it will be given to you, packed down, running over, it will be put back into your hands. Try it and see, it always works. It's not pious legalism or hoarding what we have or worshiping the gifts of God. Is deliberately and recklessly using our money to make friends for eternity. The dishonest manager. Today, he'd be written up in Money Magazine. Ingenious? Yes. Pious? No. Nope.